Welcome to this Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, episode number 53. This week we'll complete taking a brief look at each episode to date with a mention of what was discussed and one or two of the main points from that podcast. As with the last three summaries, I won't be covering all of the tips and techniques, of course, as it would take just as long as actually listening to all of the original episodes. These summaries will, though, give you a brief outline, the gist of what I've covered so far. There are many more pearls of advice hiding in the old episodes, though, so hopefully this will just give you some pointers as to what episodes you'd like to go back to and listen to fully. Let's start this week from episode 36 and run through to 49, the last episode before we started the summaries. Also, the voting is now complete for the last MBP photography assignment, so listen out at the end of the show for the winner and the two runners-up. In episode 36, we discussed filters. There are some filters that I continue to use very much, even having jumped to digital, and others that I am shying away from a little more now, as I find it easier and often better to create that effect in Photoshop, with a little preparation in the field, that is. Firstly, I'd say the polarizer is still the filter that I use the most. The main use for the polarizer is to make a blue sky bluer. It won't perform miracles. If you are under a hazy sky or in humid conditions, it won't simply transform that sky into a bright blue. But if you have a blue or bluish sky to begin with, even pale blue, then it will intensify the color. Depending on the angle of the sun, the sky as opposed to the sun, though, the effect becomes stronger or weaker. A polarizer is most effective at 90 degrees to the sun, with the effect getting weaker the further away you move from that point. The effect of a polarizer on a sky cannot really be emulated in Photoshop without a lot of selection and changing of the colors of the sky, and even then it probably would look pretty false. Plus, I really don't want to spend that much time in Photoshop. The other physical filters that I still can't do without are neutral density filters. To obtain a slow shutter speed, say to make the water of a waterfall look like it's flowing, I often use a circular neutral density filter. Until recently, I used to use a gradual neutral density filter quite a lot too, to balance the bright and dark parts of a scene, but now I generally shoot two versions of the same scene, one exposing for the highlights and one exposing for the shadows, and I merge them in Photoshop. We can see an example of this technique in image number 1079, and you can hopefully see that it's important to make your exposures in quick succession, or for example, the clouds in the sky will move and you'll lose registration of the elements in the scene. In episode 37, we looked at shooting in inclement weather. By staying indoors or on rainy days, you are depriving yourself of some great photographic opportunities. Not only are there certain images that can only be made in the rain, overcast conditions often provide very nice diffused light, and when trees, for example, are wet, the saturation of the colours is much better than when under the harsh sunlight of a clear sky. In episode 38, we looked at creating mood or atmosphere in your images. Mood is often an intangible thing, and on looking through a number of images for examples for episode 38, I came to the conclusion that I had captured mood in a number of ways. One being visual mood, caused by, say, having mist or some other visual element that invokes the feeling of mood or atmosphere, and the other I'll term implied mood. To make my point about the visual mood, I showed you shot number 8 from my gallery, which is called Misty Morning, and was shot way back in 1992 in Nottingham, near my hometown in England. Here we can see that the thick fog is enshrouding the scene, making various shades of contrast in the boughs and branches of the tree, and also making the man looking out into the background there with his back to us, almost totally a silhouette. We start to think of what he might be thinking. Is he sad or is he contemplating jumping? This, I guess, is also implied mood, but is enforced by, I think, the visual element of the fog. I'm not an expert in lighting, but lighting also has a huge effect on the mood of a shot. Lighting from the side, especially when leaving shadows on the one side of the face, seems to give a totally different mood than, say, even lighting across the whole face. The other type of mood I mentioned, implied mood, is really something that we capture as a fleeting moment, such as expressions on our faces in a candid portrait. In fact, in episode 39, I followed up on the first episode on mood with the first image that we looked at being image number 109 of five young ladies crossing the forecourt of a temple. It's customary in Japan to throw a few coins in a box at the main doors of the temple. Sometimes you'll clap your hands to attract the attention of the gods and then pray. These girls were about to do that, but walking along in the heat of the day in their yukata, a kind of summer kimono, and drinking their crushed ice drinks, I can imagine that they really didn't have a care in the world. This was more than 3 years ago now, and these five young ladies will be older and getting closer to the pressures of adulthood, but at this point in their lives, I get the impression that they were really just enjoying the day, enjoying each other's company, and probably making the sort of laid-back summer memories that will stay with them forever. This kind of explains what I was talking about, or trying to get across, about implied mood. All of these feelings are coming more from the look on their faces, and the way they're walking, the weather and lighting really didn't have a lot to do with this. So it's really just implied. I'm guessing what these young ladies will be thinking or feeling at this point. And that's what I was kind of trying to get across with implied mood. In episode 40 and 41, we took a look at a very culturally important and incredibly photographic place in Japan called Nikko, in the Tochigi Prefecture, a few hours' drive north of Tokyo. In image number 1006, I made the point that fine weather is not always going to be the best, as I just mentioned earlier. It won't always give you the best results. What I did basically was compared it to another image that I'd made the previous week on a fine spring day. The rainy day shot has much more saturated colours because of the diffused light from the overcast sky, and the leaves themselves are also physically saturated with water, bringing out their lush green colouring. I also mentioned again targeting sites at certain times of year, as I did with this shot, to get not only the young fresh leaves but also the splashes of red that are azalea flowers that are only visible in this scene for a week or so each year. We look more at the cultural aspects of Nikko in the following episode, and I touched on a bit of history. This was episode 41. To me, the photograph of the Nio statue guarding the gates of the Toshogu Temple that we can see in image number 1012 sums up a lot of what Nikko is about. Red is believed to ward off evil, and this guy looks like he will definitely be accomplishing his purpose. I won't go into detail about the history of the site again. It would be better to listen to episode 41 for that, but if you're ever in Japan and have a few days to spare, this place is definitely worth a visit, and taking your time to take in the culture and not just stay a whiz round with your camera photographing as much as possible to enjoy when you get home. In episodes 42, 43 and 44, we took an in-depth look at macro photography. Macro photography is one of my passions, and I started it really just to widen my scope with regards to finding subjects to shoot. When you limit yourself to shooting with normal lenses, there is a whole new world, a macrocosm, that you deny yourself the ability to explore. I explained some terminology such as what one-to-one or life-size macro photography means. That is, when you shoot at life-size, the subject is recorded on the film or sensor at the same size that it is in the real world. So if I shoot a grain of rice at, say, 7 millimeters across, it will be exactly that, 7 millimeters on a piece of 35 millimeter film or a full-size sensor. I also discussed about magnifications larger than life-size as we went through the series, and I discussed my 65mm 1-5x macro lens, which at 5 times would record the same 7mm grain of rice at 35mm, almost filling a 36mm wide piece of film. There are numerous problems to overcome when working with life-size and higher magnifications, including a lot more camera shake and even just focusing with the incredibly shallow depth of field at these magnifications. To overcome these, we talked about the importance of a good tripod, a flash unit specifically for macro photography, and focusing rails for accurate focusing. I also mentioned the importance of paralleling your shots when you have multiple subjects in the shot. Probably one of my favourite images from this series is image number 1025 of a bug walking on a fiery yellow and orange leaf. This was shot at close to life size with a 100mm macro lens and my macro twin light MT-24EX flash unit. One of the great things about doing macro work with a flash unit like this is that you can simply set the camera to manual, set your aperture for the desired depth of field, and then select a shutter speed to something fast enough to freeze your subject, and the flash unit will throw out as much light as necessary to light the subject. I do usually find that I use minus flash exposure compensation because the light can often be too harsh, but once you get a feel for this, it's really quite easy. Okay, so we're really just a few episodes from being totally up to date now, so let's fly through the last few before going on to the winners of the Depicting Culture assignment, for which we set the stage in the next episode, number 45. Cultural differences between people in different countries and also between different groups of people within the same country can be a great source of photographs. The first image I talked about in this episode is image number 182. I captured this airport employee bowing at a plane as it taxied towards the runway. I found this to be a very Japanese thing and had until this point not really noticed it, but it didn't really surprise me very much. I called this image Only in Japan, as I think it really depicts the politeness that the Japanese often show, especially to customers as the passengers are in the plane. But I also felt that there is a small prayer that the plane arrives at its destination safely in that very deep bow. I basically went on to discuss 7 more images that to me well depict the Japanese culture, and I also mentioned how I feel it is easier to notice a culture, including your own native culture, when you're lucky enough to step outside of that culture, as I have done in coming to Japan. In episode 46, we took a look at a number of shots from the beautiful Oirase area in the Aomori Prefecture, the northernmost prefecture before making the crossing to Hokkaido, that is. We took a further 3 weeks to cover in episodes 47, 48 and 49 my trip to Hokkaido, which brings us to the start of these summaries. These again are more like travelogues with technical and artistic tips and techniques interwoven into them. I touched on, for example, once again, how I tend to use Photoshop to stitch together two images rather than using a gradual neutral density filter. In fact, the example that we took a look at first today was from this trip. To close, let's take a look at one of the last images from the series, and indeed of my trip to Hokkaido in July 2006, which is image number 1101. With this image, I made a point about the importance of sticking with the subject until you get the image you want. I had visited this location on multiple occasions over the last few years, and I even extended this trip by one day because that line of red poppies that was not quite in full bloom when I got here 10 days previously was just not really there. I then talked about the importance of trying something different to set your images apart from the rest, as I did here by using a slow shutter speed to add movement to the barley as it sways in the breeze. This, coupled with the beautiful radiating cloud formations, makes for a great image, and I really felt that all the time and effort, and not to ignore money, that I spent to get to this point really paid off. Okay, so that's it for the summaries and a few brief updates on the information here and there. I hope that it has been of some use. Now let's move on to the announcement of the Depicting Cultures assignment winner. In reverse order, in third place, getting a placing for the second time is Orchid with Commuter Culture. This is image number M2130. That's an M for member and 2130 if you are entering the image number in the field at the top page or the podcast page at martinbaileyphotography.com. Orchid tells us that this is a scene from Leeds Central Station. Converting to black and white added a great deal of mood to the shot. I personally like the way the train is on only half visible along the right side as it curves along the tracks. That's the tracks that lead the eye into the shot, incidentally, from the bottom and wrap around to the center left. We learn something about the culture too from the scene, with the odd person on the platform and the people crossing the overhead walkway placed nicely across the top third of the frame. Great shot again, Orchid, and congratulations on third place. In second place, we have PSTRAAT or PSTRAAT with image Kicking Up Dust, in which we can see a bull rider struggling to stay on his huge bull for, we are told, 8 seconds. In this image, M1897, I love the brightness. The overall quality of light is just beautiful. The expressions on the onlookers' faces add so much to the image too, as they all seem to be mentally supporting the rider in his struggle to stay on the bull. The bull's head too turned to face the photographer, with those big patches around the eyes and big horns adds a nice touch too. Not really looking mean though, rather a little dopey in some way, but I really wouldn't say that to his face if he was standing in front of me. I like the positioning of the animal too, nicely in the left of the frame, with the rider right on the left third line. Then, of course, there's the timing, with the bull's hind legs raised high, kicking up the dust mentioned in the title. Very, very nice image. We can see from the copyright that the photographer's name is Paul Stratman, so congratulations, Paul, on a second place with this amazing image. Now, the winning image this month just blew me away, and obviously a lot of other people too. I was struggling with my own decision to vote for this image because of the Japanese connection, as I didn't want to choose it just because of my love for the Japan and everything Japanese. However, although there were so many great images again for this assignment, and I was considering a number of others for a while, the winning image is just so stunning that I too could not help but cast my vote for it. HQS Bud, or Forest Tanaka's Obachan no Kimono, is the winner of the Depicting Cultures assignment. This is image number M2203. Forest has gone to the trouble to dress his young subject in her auntie or possibly grandma's kimono and posed her with her right arm out in front of her holding a decorated folding fan. Despite there probably being a wealth of colour in this image, Forrest decided to convert to black and white, another great move, and the crop is just exquisite. I'd say that this is probably Forrest's daughter, forgive me Forrest if I'm wrong, but the way she's looking down and not at the fan but to a point probably somewhere on the floor left of her outstretched arm really to me just adds the final touches to this classic image. So Forrest, please select another print from my gallery and I'll get it out to you as soon as possible. You really have earned it with this excellent image. Congratulations. Remember that you can see the results of this and previous assignments on the scores page found at the bottom of the gallery menu at my site, and I'll put a link into the show notes. And with that, we are just about finished for today. I will be announcing the theme for the next assignment next week, as I wanted to finish the summaries this week and didn't really want to spend a lot more time going into the new assignment. Note that I will be publishing a graph shortly to show the accumulated points from the last three assignments for all images with more than one vote. I was hoping to publish this today, but I'm having some problems with the graph on my server and I need to work on it a little more first. A reminder with that is that I will be awarding a prize to the member with the most accumulated points at some point later this year, probably around the time that we've been running the assignment for 1 year. The prize will not be a print, rather I'll buy something photography related, either myself or maybe hopefully find a sponsor. But it will be something other than one of my own prints. So basically this will give members or participants the ability to win the major prize without actually even winning one of the individual ones, because that you could just keep knocking up points each assignment, although not taking first place, entering consistently could pay off in the overall grand prize at the end of the year. So please do listen out next week for the next assignment, and we'll all go out and try and get something nice, something artistic, and hopefully something anywhere near like what Forrest and the other guys have done this last month. And we'll give it a go again next month. So thanks very much for participating. Thanks very much to everyone for listening, and have a great week, whatever you do. Bye bye. The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a member of the Photocast Network. Find other great photography-related podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.